Hey guys, I'm Paul Bates and this is the Fermentation Podcast. Join me on this journey to put fermentation into practice, create culture, and revive this lost art that connects all of us to our cultures of the past. Today is Friday, October 10th, 2014, and this is episode number 9. So today I have on an amazing guy named Mark Campbell, who specializes in making some beautiful works of art that are as functional as they are beautiful. If you've ever been interested in the process of how a fermentation crock is made and hearing the insights from the craftsman himself on what goes into these ceramics, then this is the episode for you. Once you see some of these ceramics, you'll see why Vincent van Gogh is one of Mark's favorite artists, and you should be able to spot the influences of Starry Night in some of his works. After I had him on, he actually contacted me back later, wanting me to make sure that I included his recipe for his taco kraut that we had talked about later in the episode. So be sure to get by the website and check out the show notes to get that recipe that he says is amazing on fish tacos. But before that, all the topics and links for today's show will be in the show notes at fermentationpodcast.com. And if you'd like to get a hold of me, email me at paul@fermentationpodcast.com or go by the website and click on the contact button on the top. You can also connect to me on Facebook, Pinterest, YouTube, and Twitter. Just go to fermentationpodcast.com. You should see the links in the sidebar. Also, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, just head out to the website and click on the guest button on top. There's a guest submission form that I have there to fill out. All right, today we have on the show Mark Campbell, who specializes in creating unique and beautifully colored ceramics such as bowls, plates, platters, vases, and several other things. But what we're going to talk about today is fermentation crocks, fermentation vessels, and just fermentation in general. Mark, welcome to the Fermentation Podcast.
Hey, glad to be here.
Yeah, I actually found you from a group on Facebook, Wild Fermentation. I'll talk about that later, but can you just give the audience a brief introduction of yourself and maybe a little bit of your story?
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, I originally grew up in Orange County and moved up to Humboldt County on the coast in about 1985. And where I went to and attended Humboldt State University, I was originally a fisheries major, and go figure, the only fisheries class I took was tropical aquarium management. I've always been into art and especially ceramics, and ended up with an art teaching degree with my emphasis in the art part in ceramics. During the whole time, I was cooking in restaurants, you know, to get through college and whatnot. And I'm still currently cooking in restaurants. I've been cooking in restaurants for 27 years, and I've been doing pottery for well over 30. So anyway, that's a good introduction for me.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. I mean, being in the food industry, what kind of restaurants?
Well, you know, I started out like in a brew pub kind of setting, doing, you know, chicken wings, burgers, that kind of thing. And then started getting into fine dining. There was actually, when I started running one of the fine dining restaurants here in the county and became like the rib room chef of the Eureka Inn, I pretty much almost like forgot about pottery for well over a decade, where all I was thinking about was food and doing my homework and, you know, coming up with new dishes and keeping up with new trends and whatnot. And it was about almost 4 years ago now, my wife sent me a picture of a kiln for sale, and I ended up buying the kiln, and then I had to have a wheel, and then pretty much the rest is history. I mean, I love cooking still, but I think I'd rather be a full-time potter, and I'm kind of working in that direction.
Yeah, well, for some of the things that I've seen you create, you are definitely well on your way, that's for sure. I mean, I'm actually looking at your Etsy page right now, and just some of the things that you create, I mean, I can only describe it as art. I would almost consider it like something that would, you know, reside on the shelf rather than something you would use, but it's pretty amazing stuff.
Yeah, and a lot of that has to do with, you know, some of my instructors and different workshops I've done that inspired me with color and whatnot. And I try to, like, make each piece almost try to tell a story or make you think about something, you know, besides just your average generic pottery. I love earthy stuff, but I also really love to go in the direction of, like, screaming loud.
Oh, yeah, I can tell that. Especially, I mean, I'm into photography, and I love taking sunset pictures and, you know, of the night sky. And it looks like some of these things in here, you know, like on your website, you say you focus more on having them look like a beautiful sunset. Or, you know, this one I'm looking at here, the kombucha crock with the spigot. It almost looks like, you know, Starry Night, you know, Van Gogh.
Yeah, which is happens to be my favorite artist, go figure. Most of my stuff has, you know, a lot of it to do with nature. I would say half of it has to do with, like, ocean-related influences, whether it be a sunset or the colors of the water or things like that.
Yeah, I guess I kind of figures being over there on the West Coast and, you know, in California. How close are you to the ocean?
Like 2 miles, so pretty close.
Oh, even closer than me. I'm maybe about 10 miles from the Atlantic, so opposite ends there.
Yeah, about a mile from the bay and a couple miles from the ocean.
It looks like you have quite a few different crocks and ceramics. So, you know, you have bowls and plates, and it looks like a sake set. And what made you decide to start creating things for the fermentation community? And, you know, how did you get into fermentation?
Well, that has a lot to do with a good friend of mine that I grew up with that lives in Petaluma. And he's a real foodie also. And he wanted me to make him a big, like, 4-gallon fermenting crock, which happened to be the first one I made, go figure it. And that was a lot of trial and error. The first couple, I didn't have the wall thickness down, and they cracked, and it was a real problem. But I learned a lot through the process. And anyway, I finally made a nice one to him, and we met up, and I gave it to him. And then he had a couple friends that wanted fermenting crocks, so I made those. And through a lot of trial and error, I figured out what works, what doesn't work so much. I mean, I'm still learning, but you know, it was really challenging. Actually, the fermentation crock with the water moat and having the weights and the lid fit right was probably the most difficult thing I've had to make to date. And so anyway, after I made a few for his friends and whatnot, I thought I would see if, you know, the public was interested, and posted a picture on that Facebook group, like you were saying, a wild fermentation, and it just really blew up from there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I cannot make enough fermenting crocks.
Yeah, it's amazing how many people are actually in that group. When I first started the fermentation podcast, I was looking around. It didn't seem like there was that many groups around, and then somebody pointed me there. And it's amazing you can post something and within like 2 minutes. And I know you're very active in there. I see you in there all the time posting stuff, especially, you know, pictures of your beautiful crocks. And it looks like a lot of people are buying them, so I'm sure you have a little bit of a wait list there, I would guess.
Yeah, well, it's like usually when you order it, it takes about a month before I can ship it out. Because after I make it, it takes a couple weeks to dry. Because if the piece isn't all the way dried out, when you try to fire it, you know, I've had pieces blow up or crack or all kinds of bad things happen. So, you know, you really got to be patient after you make it. Make sure it's dry enough to fire. And that's where it, you know, since I've had such a onslaught of these made-to-order listings, I haven't really been able to add any new items to my shop because I'm just keeping up with the made-to-order part.
I bet. I have to say, probably my favorite one that I see over there, some of the pictures that you post, would be the crocks that almost look like they're metal with the rivets or the
spears. Yeah, the sheet metal thing. That's kind of a new thing, a new direction I was kind of going, just playing around. You know, I love making these crocks, and I finally almost got to the point where I can do some own spin of my own spins on them and whatnot. And I've always been intrigued with, you know, the whole sheet metal look and the steampunk kind of thing. And so I thought I would throw my own spin on a few, and they seem to have been really popular.
So you also make the weights?
Yeah, yeah. I make the weights to fit inside and all of that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I mentioned that when I first seen you on there, I think the first time I saw you, it was probably a couple pictures of your crocs, but then I didn't realize who you were. And it was either you or I think it was somebody else posted the the YouTube video of you going through the process of making one of your fermentation crocks with the water moat that's the airlock. Could you maybe talk a little bit about that and, you know, the process of it and how challenging it is and, you know, the steps you have to go through?
Well, yeah, it's making like a crock, you know, any kind of wide bottom piece, you know, you really got to make the walls even and really compress the bottom really well, just to prevent those S cracks that us potters all know too well. Anyway, another real important thing when you're making it is when you start with your chunk of clay and you open it up, then what you do to get it bigger, they're called pulls. And that's what thins the piece out and, you know, makes the piece taller and wider and all of that. I've learned that you really got to make that moat after like your first one or two pulls, or otherwise you just won't have enough clay left over it when the piece is made to make a good enough moat that's going to hold water. So that was like a big light bulb when I finally figured that out. And that's the most challenging part, that and making the lid fit right, you know, in the well, because, you know, you have that inner lip that sticks up, you know, so it can hold the water in. And you really got to get a good fit on the lid and the well. And so that took quite a bit of time and effort to learn how to make that lid fit right.
How long does it take, you know, from, say, clay to a finished glazed product?
Well, that really depends. The gallon ones take quite a bit more because I put the handles on them and whatnot. But I would say, you know, probably a couple hours, just because it'll take me, I'd say, about 45 minutes of, you know, making the piece. And then after it's dry, trimming it and making the lid fit right and all of that, you know, that's about 45 minutes. But it actually takes twice as long to glaze the piece as it does to make it.
Gotcha. So I've seen online, when I first started looking for crocks, you know, many years ago. Since then, I've just been using mason jars, but, you know, I kind of thought twice when I seen some of these, you know, beautiful crocks there. Because, you know, I know the harsh crocks, I think they range, you know, anywhere from about the same price as yours. It just got me thinking, like, wow, you know, why would you want a boring, you know, harsh crock when you can have something that really looks like, you know, unique? And it is unique because you hand make it every time. It's pretty amazing. It seems like a great deal for such a great piece of work.
Well, I like the fact, I'm just trying to give your average, I mean, there's nothing wrong with harsh crocks. I mean, I think they're great. You know, being a pottery fan, I like just about any kind of pottery. But I wanted to give them a little bit of a facelift and add a little more personality into them. You know, a lot of these made-to-order ones, people will want butterflies on them, or they want their own specific color to match their counter and that kind of thing. And that's where what I think is a real benefit to these made-to-order pieces, is you can kind of add your own personality to the piece.
You know, I actually noticed the one thing that is different about yours, too, is what is that little indented lip for? Because, you know, on the harsh crocks, they're just circles all the way around. What's that little lip, the indent,
well,
for?
The reason I put that lip there is, you know, when you want to check on your ferment and it's full of water, you can't just pull the lid off because there's some suction going on. And if you pull it off and there's a lot of water in it, some of that water in that well is going to burp into your ferment. So what I do is I put that lip on there so you can, you know, grab your crock and hold the lid down and pour that water out of that basin a lot easier. So when you lift the handle, you know, you won't have that problem with the water burping inside your ferment.
Yeah, that makes sense. And, you know, I guess if you pull the top off, you don't want to happen to pull the handle off, or I guess it just makes it easier. So have you actually gotten into fermenting, or are you just kind of catering to the fermentation market, or do you like sauerkraut or pickles? Or
you know, about the first four I made, I just made them because, and, you know, the first one I made, I honestly did not even know what a fermentation crock was. Through a lot of research and, you know, going on that page, I mean, it really opened my eye. You know, being a cook, you know, I've always been fascinated with food, and I've taken a lot of the things for granted that, you know, for instance, using a vinegar, using pickles in my recipes, or capers, or even mustard, ketchup, sriracha, hot sauce, any of that. Those are all things I kind of just took for granted and grabbed it and used it to make whatever dish I'm making. And that kind of opened my eyes into making, you know, the condiments to go into the dish. And that really opened my eyes as far as seeing what I did through the wild fermentation page. And on top of that, the one thing that really turns me on to fermenting is I've always been into like fusion food and infusing flavors through reduction sauces and stuff like that. But with the fermentation, I found out that you can infuse the, you know, different flavors without cooking and keeping things raw just through the fermentation. And that was like another real eye opener for me.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It seems like there's a lot of chefs, you know how they always go to farmers markets and they're looking for interesting ingredients. I could definitely imagine in the future, you know, it seems like fermentation has a little bit of a revival. And I know, you know, the USDA with the food safety, they haven't really come around just yet, but there's different pickle shops and kombucheries and things like that popping up here and there.
Well, yeah, you know, I've always liked pickles. I've always liked sauerkraut, but homemade pickles and homemade sauerkraut just are on like a whole different level than what you could buy at the store. You know, I currently, you know, I have four crocks in use pretty much all the time, as well as mason jars with weights. I make my own apple cider vinegar, and yeah, so I've been doing it for a little over a year, and you know, learning a lot and having fun through trial and error. Mostly, most of my ferments have been a success. The only failures I've had with fermenting would be trying pickle slices. They just turned into the mushiest pickles ever. But I mean, other than that, I've had pretty great success using the crocks as well as mason jars.
Yeah, I hear you on that one. I actually have two mason jars of pickles that I had had in the fridge maybe a little too long, or maybe I just had used the wrong type of pickles, but they're just mush now. Whereas there's some in the fridge sitting right next to it that are just crispy. So, you know, it's kind of a hit and miss.
Yeah, yes. And, you know, I learned also about, you know, tannins and, you know, everyone saying use grape leaves or oak leaves. But then I learned that, you know, like blackberry leaves or raspberry leaves work too. And, you know, those are in my front and backyard. So I've been using them for tannins and it seems to have been working pretty good.
Oh, yeah. I haven't actually tried that yet just because I pretty much had them all crunchy. But I've even heard some people say to try to use black tea, which was kind of strange. But I mean, you know, I guess whatever works.
Yeah, I mean, if it works for you, I mean, or it works for anyone, you know, if it's not broke, don't fix it, in my opinion.
I know you said you've tried pickles and how did you make the vinegar?
The apple cider vinegar?
Yeah, the apple cider.
Yeah, I just got some really good, it was pasteurized, which, you know, I was trying to find the apple cider to start with, but I just couldn't find any without having to travel like 50 miles to the nearest place I could get it. So I learned that, you know, you can use pasteurized apple juice, preferably like organic, and I added a little champagne yeast to it and then put it in a carboy for about 10 days. And then from that point, once I had that hard cider, I transferred it into one of my crocks. And it's almost 9 months old now, and it's almost gone. I need to make some more, but yeah, it was pretty good.
That's pretty nice. Using the champagne yeast, that's a good idea. I've seen some people, you know, they use the wild fermentation way, just kind of let it go on its own and stir it. But yeah, I could definitely...
Well, I mean, that way works great if you're starting with an unpasteurized cider, you know. But if it's been pasteurized, you need to get something to get it going. So
yeah,
that's where the yeast came in. Next time I do it, I think I'm going to make a road trip and get the real stuff and just start from scratch.
That's amazing how many things, you know, you can use apple cider vinegar in, even to clean with. Do you put it on your salad or... Just
yeah,
kinda...
mainly I put it on my salad, and I do like a tablespoon every day. And ever since I started doing that, I have not had heartburn in like 6 months.
That's pretty interesting. It must change the pH a little in your stomach, or
yeah, it does something. You know, it's along the same way that, you know, the other fermented veggies and whatnot, the different probiotics and whatnot.
What would be, because I know you don't use a whole lot of fermentation, I mean, a little bit of apple cider vinegar and some pickles here and there. What would you say is the way that you eat? Are you paleo or are you just a regular guy eating good food? Or
Well, you know, I'm a regular guy eating good food. I love the different sauerkrauts I make because, you know, I'll make your very basic sauerkraut, and there's nothing wrong with that, you know, just cabbage and salt. But I like to put different spins on my sauerkraut. I make a taco kraut for my tacos. In that, you know, I'll use cumin seeds and sun-dried chipotle peppers and lemon juice and fresh oregano, and I'll ferment it that way. And it really gives it, I call it my Tex-Mex kraut. Other people might call it a curdido or something like that, but it really brings out the flavor in your taco. It's amazing. You know, I'll get my, what I call my Tex-Mex kraut, and I'll mix some fresh cilantro in it. Wow, it makes a taco like a whole different like flavor level than a normal taco. You know, I make a pizza kraut too, where, you know, I'll use jalapenos or serranos, garlic, fresh oregano, fresh thyme. You know, and then I'll ferment that for a month like I will any other kraut. But then it has kind of like this Italian kind of flavor to it. I like putting different spins on old ideas.
Oh, yeah, you're giving me all kinds of great ideas. I mean, I love fermented peppers. I've said that before on the show. But, yeah, actually mixing it in with sauerkraut and then putting it on a taco, that sounds like a great idea. I can picture that. On pizza, I never even thought about that.
Yeah, you know, I started with the basic, and then from there I've just kind of went, you know, I'm just trying to think of outside the box of different ways to use sauerkraut besides, you know, your standard bratwurst and hot dogs. Just, you know, using food you'd eat every day, but incorporating some kind of fermented food to it is really awesome.
Yeah, I could see the chef in you coming out there.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, I might be somewhat new to fermenting, but I know a lot about food and flavors and what works and what doesn't. And so that kind of gave me a good kickstart here.
Is there anything, you know, in the future you want to kind of branch into to try to, you know, like make anything else like sodas or cheese or anything like that?
You know, the kefir, that sounds like a great idea. I'd love to do that. Sometime soon, I'm going to start some kombucha. And yeah, I'm really interested with you know, the whole second ferment and adding different fruits and whatever else, you know, that would all be great too. What I'm going to have to do though is, because we have such a small kitchen, is I'm going to have to put up a separate shelf out in my studio for fermentation purposes, I think, because as it is now, I have like 5 crocks and dozen half-gallon mason jars and starting to take over my kitchen and keep my wife happy, you know. I think I got to sacrifice a little of my studio space.
I know what you mean there. It seems like everybody that gets into this, they start getting jars and crocks and everything all over the place. And, you know, maybe even a second refrigerator to start storing some of this.
Oh, yeah. I really need one of them, too. It's ridiculous.
For some of those, you know, people more in the South like me, I don't have any kind of a root cellar.
Yeah.
You know, in Florida, they would just flood, so.
Yeah. Don't have one of them either.
Have there been, you know, any kind of mistakes you've made along the way? You know, have you seen, say you're making a batch of sauerkraut, and have you had anything float to the top and get moldy? And
you know, no, I've had like a perfect success rate with the sauerkraut. I've had zero problems at all. And you know, I've made kimchi too and had zero problems. The only thing that really I've like stumbled upon was trying to make a good successful batch of pickled chips. Pickles, like the little whole pickling cucumbers, those are my favorite. But, you know, one time I got a hold of like a real nice organic cucumber that was kind of big, wouldn't fit in my jar. And so, yeah, I cut that one up. And, yeah, just the mushiness of the pickles really been my only failure.
Yeah, I see what you mean there. Yeah, I've had my share of mold here and there. But, I mean, I guess that kind of goes maybe a little more with using mason jars. And it's kind of open to the air. I know with your crocs, as long as you keep the water moat up there, then it's just going to have a good seal. Do you are you constantly opening it, or do you just stick everything in there and, you know, let it go?
I think the main important thing with, you know, fermenting is getting the brine level right and making sure that your ferment's like 1/4 inch above whatever kind of weights you're using, because I think that knocks most of the problem out that people would have with ferments. You know, I got to be real careful to make sure there's nothing like floating, that kind of thing. And when I put the lid on, I won't check it for a couple weeks. You know, I'm not going to open it every day. If I feel confident with what's inside the crock, I'll just kind of let it be. Because otherwise, there isn't really, you know, if you're going to check it every day, a couple times a day, there's no difference with just using a jar versus a fermenting crock with a water seal. You know, if you're going to open it up that much, it kind of defeats the purpose.
Yeah, it seems like that, because I know it builds up CO2 and then that kind of pushes all the oxygen out and doesn't let the mold get a foothold. Say somebody did, though, you know, open it up constantly and then they ended up with mold in their crock. I know some people say you can stir it in. Some people say you remove it, then stir it. And some people say just throw the whole batch away. Do you have any thoughts on that? I know you haven't had any moldy, but...
I'm kind of weary of the mold thing. You know, I've read a lot of different comments. You know, I've read Wild Fermentation, and Sandor Katz will say, take it off. And then other old people will say the mold has roots and it goes down places you can't really see and throw the whole batch out. And I haven't really come across the whole contemplation. Do I keep it or do I not? As far as cooking always goes, you know, if when in doubt, throw it out. So I'm sure if I found a good batch of mold in something I made, I'd be more tend to throw it in my compost pile too.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes I feel the same. If I see maybe a little spot, for me, it's not a big deal, but you know, somebody else, it might be a little bit of a worry.
I think if I had a little spot, I wouldn't worry. I would just pull it out. And, you know, yeast, I've seen some cam yeast and, you know, I'll have to skim that off. But, yeah, if I saw like a big giant chunk of mold, yeah, I wouldn't think twice. I'd just count my losses, figure out what I learned from that, learn from my mistakes, and kind of moved on.
I saw somebody in the group had some kind of issue where they had a bunch of mold, and you had some thoughts on that in terms of your crocks anyway, how you would clean them to get rid of the mold. What are your thoughts on actually, you know, getting rid of it from your crocks and from the weights?
Well, I mean, the best way, some people say use bleach, but all bleach really does is like dye the color of the mold. It really doesn't completely kill the mold. The best way is just with vinegar. And, you know, I would clean the crock with some vinegar and some soapy water, rinse it well. Then I would put the weights, not the crock, but the weights inside an oven. Then turn the oven on like 250. Let them sit in there for like 20 minutes, turn the oven off, and wait for them to cool down so you can pull them out with your bare hand. What that does is the heat and the vinegar will kill the mold.
That sounds like a good idea. Just kind of almost starting from fresh, and then everything's sterilized. No big deal there.
Yeah, but a lot of that also, like, when I see mold on weights and stuff, those weights weren't glazed. You know, they're probably stoneware weights. You know, they might be vitrified. The weights in my crocks, they're all glazed, so the mold would just wash off just with a green scrubby or just water. You know, I glaze my weights, but there's nothing wrong with the ones that aren't glazed, but I just know it's a whole lot harder to get rid of mold on one of those weights versus one of my weights.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. I almost thought all weights were unglazed. I'm not sure why you would want to either way, but at least I know now, you know, make sure nothing gets inside of it. I know, at least from reading in different areas, ancient people used to put a stick in a fermentation and then pull it out and then put it into another one, and it's like transferring it. So maybe the weight would end up being somewhat of a sponge or trapping the little particles here and there, unglazed ones anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, I went to this fermentation festival up at the college, Humboldt State University, where I went to school just up the street from me. And I learned a lot from the Koreans, and that they're not afraid of using plastic. All their crocks are earthenware. They're not stoneware or porcelain, and they've been using them for centuries. They're not worried about a brine level. They don't even add a brine in it. They stuff the crock as much as they can and put a lid on it and leave it on the counter for a week, or they'll put their big crock in the dirt for about 20 days. Like, yeah, I think it was 20 days, and then call it good.
That's pretty interesting. I remember reading something in a Japanese book about that, but you know how they would bury them. But yeah, I'm sure over in Asia, there's probably not even really any cookbooks. This is just what you do. It's just a part of your life.
Well, yeah, like in Korea, I mean, kimchi is such a huge part of their culture. And I mean, they make, you know, the beginning of winter, it's like just about every community is doing something to help with the making of the kimchi. And that, because that's what gets them through winter. I mean, they say it's like 96% of every family has kimchi with dinner. And if kimchi is not on your dinner, you just don't, it doesn't even feel like a complete dinner. So, I mean, it's so important for them. And, you know, that's where a lot of us have learned from, as far as the whole fermenting and keeping things so you can have something good and healthy to eat when it's actual winter, you know, where nothing's growing. So,
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, especially in colder climates. In terms of the fermentation vessels, and you know, you said you use a glaze, and I guess all that's, well, obviously it's food safe, but is it just a regular glaze like you would get on any other thing that you would buy at the store, or a special glaze?
You know, I just use certified non-toxic glazes to begin with that don't have lead. And just for extra insurance, I don't use like the glaze you would see on the outside of the piece on the inside of the weights. I just use pretty much your safest glaze of all, which would be like a clear gloss glaze. So the inside is white versus the outside is whatever color you want. The white is actually the color of the clay body, you know, with the clear glaze over it.
Gotcha. You know, and I'm again looking at your Etsy over here, and it looks like, you know, you have fermentation crocks, you have carboys, kombucha crocks that actually have a wooden spigot. What gave you the idea for the wooden spigot there?
Well, that's another big debate, you know, the wood versus plastic versus stainless steel. I think the plastic spigot actually works better as far as flow and whatnot, but it sure doesn't look as good. And, you know, a lot of people are weary with plastic and swear by the wooden spigot. And so I finally found a wooden spigot that poured halfway decent. When I was happy enough with it that I decided to give them a choice of plastic or wood. I haven't found a real good source for a stainless steel one yet, but, you know, they're pretty pricey. And for what I'm doing, I mean, I could make one where you could buy your own stainless steel spigot and it'll fit it. Or the wooden ones seem to work pretty good. They're a cork and bamboo, and there's no adhesives. The bamboo fits in the cork real nice, acts like a bunt. I'm pretty happy with those. I just started those like a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I can see from looking at a picture of that how simple it is. It reminds me a little bit of a big wooden barrel that has beer, and it would be just a spigot that you would pour beer out of.
Yeah.
It's pretty neat looking. On the sourdough starter crock, is there really any difference between that and the regular fermentation crocks, or is it shaped differently for any reason, or is it?
Well, you know, it's a little bit on the beefy side, just so it'll keep a nice even temperature, but it's just a fancy lidded jar, more or less. There really isn't much of a difference, except it's nice to look at, and I know how people are with their sourdough starter. A lot of people have asked me to make them just so they can, you know, retire their older vessels. They don't take up much space. I've tried to get the general idea of how big everyone's sourdough starter is. And some people say it's a gallon, but then I've got 10 kids, you know, and then I think overall, I think like a quart size seems to be the standard. So that's when I just decided to start making those.
Yeah, I might have to try one of those out. Lately, I've, you know, just been using Pyrex, and it's not that pretty sitting around. I think my wife calls them special surprises. What is that thing covered in the fridge? Or, yeah. you know, they're all over the place. Have you had a lot of feedback on your carboys, or has anybody been?
I've really only sold a couple of them, and, you know, I love the one I use. You know, like I say, I've just, I've made hard cider with it, and I've made the apple cider vinegar. But other than that, you know, it's the same kind of concept where they're a little bit on the beefy side, just because I, you know, in general for crocks and whatnot, you know, keeping that even temperature is really important. And sometimes, you know, it'll get real cold fast, and, you know, it'll take a lot longer for that crock to actually cool down.
Yeah. Say someone overseas is listening to this, because I know we have some people in Australia and New Zealand and other countries, and say, you know, they wouldn't be able to order it, or just somebody that's interested in getting started in pottery or ceramics. Where did you get your start, you know, on actual pottery? And, you know, what would you tell them if they wanted to start making plates or anything like that?
Well, I would just check with your local community. You know, junior colleges are great. A lot of places have co-ops. Some people have in small, like little groups for workshops and things like that. Any of those are great. You know, I started when I was in kindergarten, and I've been making pottery ever since. So
it seems like those maker spaces, I don't know if you've heard of those, but those are getting really popular. It's say you have a mechanic shop or a milling shop, and they have all the really expensive machinery. You just go there and pay a fee and use all of their stuff. I'm sure there's some
ceramic. There's places like that around here. And, you know, a lot of communities will have something, you know, like I say, whether it's a junior college or some kind of art co-op or whatnot. But it shouldn't be too hard to find something like that.
True. I would say for the people, you know, that don't feel like getting their hands dirty, you know, they would easily just pop over to your website and pick up a couple of those.
Yeah.
Say, like your friends or family, do you have any comments from them about, you know, you making pickles or your own apple cider vinegar, or they think you're a little strange for it, or do they like it?
No, most of them are real inspired, and, you know, like my sister-in-law, she refused to try sauerkraut. She's like, no way, that stuff is gross, blah, 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 and I made her try it, and, you know, I've converted quite a few of my friends. A lot of my friends around here now actually have one of my fermenting crocks. I don't really sell my seconds for, like, whatever reason, you know, the outside might have been chipped, or the glaze ran on the bottom or something. I've just kind of given those away. And so, yeah, I have quite a few friends that are making their own sauerkraut and pickles and whatnot now. It's pretty cool. Even converted my parents.
Oh, wow. That's kind of hard. I remember giving my mom a few slices of pickles or a sip of kombucha, and she kind of cringes at it. You know, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, fortunately, my mom has, you know, she's loved sauerkraut, and now she can actually make her own. Instead of buy those jars of the pasteurized stuff that's not even actually fermented.
Yeah, the flavor is just not there. So say you have somebody that's just getting into fermentation or would like to, and, you know, they're nervous about it. Is there anything you would tell them to kind of calm their fears, or, you know, what would you say?
Well, I would tell them it's really easier than it looks, and it can be intimidating. But, you know, unless you actually give it a try, you'll never know. The health benefits are there, you know, as far as the different things that it'll do for your antibodies and whatnot, you know, so I'll kind of convince them on the physical benefits as well as taste. You know, I think mold would probably be the thing that scares them away the most. But, you know, like I say, if you do everything right, you know, you should have a pretty good success rate.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's definitely not as hard as you would think. And, you know, there's a lot of support groups out there now, you know, not only my small podcast or, you know, different little websites here and there, but there's massive Facebook groups out there, like the one I found you on, you know, Wild Fermentation.
Yeah, that's a great group. Another great one is called the Fermenter's Kitchen.
Yeah, I'm in there too. I think I have a few of them in there. It's amazing. There's another one. I think it's a sourdough group, you know, for people that like bread.
Yeah, and then there's Kombucha Nation. That's a good group too. Yeah, there's lots of good groups on Facebook, actually.
So as we get kind of toward the end here, is there any last thoughts you'd like to leave with the listeners or anything?
Just don't be chicken to play with some clay if you ever so desire. And as far as fermenting, it's easier than it looks. You should really give it a shot.
Yeah, right from the ceramic expert himself that actually makes the fermentation crocks. So as we kind of wrap up here, can you let the listeners know where they can find your site, maybe your Etsy, buy your crocks, or any of the other things that you're into, Facebook, or anything else you'd like to share?
Yeah, well, you know, I have my own website. You can go to markcampbellceramics.com. You could also go on Etsy.com and search in shops for Mark Campbell Ceramics. And I also have a Facebook business page, same thing, Mark Campbell Ceramics. I didn't change the name to make it simple, so you should be able to find me just about anywhere.
All right, that sounds great. So everything we've talked about on today's show will be in the show notes, and I invite everyone to come out to fermentationpodcast.com and leave some comments, and also get over, check out Mark's Etsy page to see some of those amazing ceramics that he's made. He has quite a few there. Get over to his website and Facebook, and Mark, I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. This was fun.
All right, this has been Paul Bates from the Fermentation Podcast, along with Mark Campbell, encouraging you to put fermentation into practice, ferment responsibly, and get out there and create some culture.